Hi there, this is Michael Helbling for the Digital Analytics Power Hour. I'm excited because we are coming up on our 100th episode as a podcast. Mo, Tim, and I have been brainstorming like mad, trying to figure out how to make this episode special. And we've come up with, I think, a great plan. We want to make it special by including what's most special about the podcast, and that's you, our listeners. So we want you to submit your questions we can answer on the podcast. And here's the great thing. If your question gets selected, you win a great prize that's unique to the podcast, 100th episode. So submit your questions. Here's how you do it. You send a 30-second audio clip introducing yourself and then your question in 30 seconds or less to contact@analyticshour.io. Again, that's contact@analyticshour.io, and your sound bite or question clip, just include it in your email, introducing yourself and asking your question, and then you'll be in the running. Any question goes. If you get selected, you win a great prize. We're going to take submissions from the time you hear this up until September 15th. So from now until September 15th is when the submission deadline is. So submit your questions. We're excited to hear from you, our audience. Make you guys part of our special 100th episode. All right, let's get it going. Oh, bonus points for anyone who includes the words quintessential analyst when speaking about Tim Wilson.
Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Tim, Michael, Mo, and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analyticshour and their website analyticshour.io. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 96. Have you spent all day up to your eyeballs in SQL code? Are you afraid that after all your efforts, you need more education or proof that your education is enough? That's a quandary that we're all in an industry that's always changing, and so all of us must change too. Well, yesterday's log file analysis skills aren't going to get you that sweet data scientist job. And so that's why we're here talking about learning as an analyst on this episode. But let me introduce you to my co-hosts. First off, it's Mo Kiss, who just learned something new today.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Mo. And next, Tim Wilson, who has actually incorporated the entire corpus of analytics knowledge. Way to go, Tim. You've arrived.
Hello, all, and fuck you, Michael.
And I'm Michael Helbling with a strong set of log file analysis skills. All right, but we needed a guest to round out our discussion and break the awkward pauses that have become the norm for the show. Our guest is Lizzie Allen Klein. She is a consumer insights analyst at Google. Prior to that, she held product management and analytics roles at companies like Netflix and Metamarkets. And now she is our guest. Welcome to the show, Lizzie.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Awesome. All right. So, Mo, you and Lizzie met this year, and I'd love to hear kind of how you guys got onto this topic and then what spawned this conversation, and that'll get us rolling. So, what happened?
Yeah. So, Lizzie and I met over in Texas at CXL, and we got chatting about learning and education. And I think it was a little bit like I was kind of wondering, should I go back and study? Should I be doing more courses? Which I think as analysts, we're always all thinking about. And Lizzie talked me through her journey. So I'm really keen to hear you kind of explain a little bit the rationale about the route that you've chosen to go down.
Yeah. I basically just took the windiest path possible and somehow ended up in the right-ish place. No, I'm just kidding. So I, on paper, I think nowadays have a background college degree that lends itself well to going into data analytics. At the time, though, I had no idea. I had no idea what data science was. We didn't really use any like software or anything. We weren't even allowed to use calculators in many of my advanced mathematics classes. So, you know, I had minimal training in terms of SQL, R, Python. I had no training coming out of college, and I kind of just stumbled into analytics. And really what drove me to start learning SQL, which is where I started off, is really the frustration with using tools like Google Analytics. And I'm just the sort of person who really wants to know how the sausage is made, except for sausage. I don't want to know how that's made. But for, like, metaphorically speaking, I want to know how the sausage is made. I want to understand what actually is a user when I'm looking at users. I want to understand what a session is when I'm looking at sessions. I want to understand the exact mathematics that goes into the calculation of any metric. And, you know, reading up myself on all of those metrics and dimensions and everything in Google Analytics, I just felt like, conceptually, there should be a way that I could do more with this tool, and I couldn't. And so I wanted to both fix analytics tools, and I also wanted to learn more about how data is brought from the cloud into a user interface for me to interact with, because I didn't know anything about really the cloud at the time. So I entered a startup called MetaMarkets. They still kind of exist. They were acquired by Snapchat recently. And that is where I really got my first introduction to SQL. And it was through talking with my engineering peers. I was actually a product manager because, again, I wanted to solve problems with visual analytics tools. I was, like, bought into the, you know, the dream of the democratization of data for all, which now I don't really
believe in.
I'm so excited. That's a wait. I think what we're forming here, Tim, is like this point of disillusionment with data democratization, like the Gartner hype cycle. It's like you believe in it, and then you get into it for a while, and you're like, oh no.
I think we just found one of the qualifying questions for our guests, though. That's whenever a vendor reaches out and thinks that their CTO should be on, we should say, how do you feel about data democratization? Do you have anything to say about it? And if they gush about it, we're like, you're done. No.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Back to you. Yeah.
No, it's okay.
I want to take a little victory lap on that one.
I basically wanted to understand everything about how to query data.
So that jump, because I feel like a lot of my progression has also been, there's some other team that's doing something, and I'm like, I sort of know what they do, but I kind of want to play around with it. So, but to get from no SQL to dabbling with SQL, was that you kind of hiding off on the evenings and weekends and trying to figure it out? Or were you talking, you're like, I'm the product manager, I'm looking over your shoulder, what do I need to install and connect to just tinker around with this so I can work with you better? Or was it neither, those are two extremes and it was neither one?
It took like 2 years to get there. So basically, I didn't really know anything about SQL. You go and you Google, and I don't know, for me, I don't retain information, and I'm very bad at understanding, I guess, mapping a concept to reality, unless I actually do it and get my hands on it and see for myself what I can do. So, like, you know, like I said, I studied actuarial mathematics. I came out of college having taken a bunch of statistics courses, but I had like the freaking crypt keeper, like, who crawled out of his, like, he was like 95 or something, teaching me theoretical statistics. And he knew nothing about R or anything. And so I came out of that with no actual practical knowledge of how to apply these concepts and not really understanding what they mean. And so it was really when I started actually understanding how to query for data that started my fascination with going beyond and then applying some of the concepts I learned way back in the day in college and applying it to the actual data that I was grabbing and manipulating. But to get to there, started off with talking to some of my peers at a startup who were actually the ones who knew how to query code. They were kind of teaching me the concepts, and I had to rely on that knowledge in order to build features and products for this startup. So I had to kind of understand conceptually what it meant to query and transform and aggregate data and then load it, which is a really hard thing, especially if you miss that aggregation part. And, you know, I had to understand those concepts in order to make my features and my products usable and also just functional. So you're not waiting for like 15 minutes for a million rows of data to load in what is essentially a pivot table. Mm. there are trade-offs you have to make, and you have to understand why you have to make those trade-offs. And so you have to understand the concepts of basically ETL. So that being said, I wasn't on my weekends like going and subscribing to different online courses. I mean, I would be lying if I said I didn't like check out Khan Academy and Coursera here and there. And I basically tried a few things here and there, but nothing stuck.
Well, that was my only multi-week dive into online learning was probably 2012 or so. I could probably check my LinkedIn profile and find out. It was the Coursera course on R, because I was hearing stuff about it, but I had that same I made it through it. I was every weekend thinking, oh crap, I'm not gonna be able to figure this out. Then I'd get through it and it would be fine. So I wound up passing the class and then had no, I was trying to learn it in the abstract. I actually didn't have something to do with it. And so then like another couple of years passed before I kind of came back to it. And I don't know how much, I'd like to think that something in that course kind of stuck, but as best I can tell, it wasn't until I got back and said, no, I'm going to do something with it. I know enough about R of what I could do with it, but I almost felt like I started from scratch, which I struggle the same way when it comes to statistics and machine learning with the digital analytics data, making that link when I'm reading about, you know, something. I feel like it's taken me months at times to actually figure out, like, I understand conceptually what a random forest is. And now what the hell do I do with it with this data that I'm working with? So
it's amazing how when you actually have to apply some of these concepts, your confidence just shatters.
Like, I got it. And then, oh, crap, I have no idea.
The more
I think about it,
I literally just wasted.
Oh, I have gone through that so many times.
I do wonder if some of it is the design of the courses, because I did the R course through Coursera too, and I really, like, to be perfectly blunt, I struggled through bits of it a lot. And it wasn't until after I finished that other people were like, oh, actually, that probably isn't the best course to do. They teach you a whole bunch of shit about R that you just don't need to know practically for your job. And you'll get stuck in that component of the course. Whereas, like, you probably only need to know 20% of the course to actually be able to do your job really well. And then the other 80%, you would learn kind of as you go and as you need to know those concepts. And I was like, oh yeah, that makes more sense. So when people ask me now, that's the advice that I give them. But I have found, like, lately I've started doing some of the data camp courses, and I found some of them are a little bit more practical, like, that because they're specifically like R for data mining, R for stats, R. So, like, you're not learning everything you need to know about R, you're learning it for like a particular thing that you want to do, if that makes sense.
I've been a big fan of data camp.
You are or you're not?
I am. Because I like being able to learn, I guess, techniques that I can apply. Hmm. So I think the stepping away from formal education, if you want to understand how best to learn online or other ways offline, know thyself. Like, look back at how you best learn over time, like how, like in your experience, what points in life where did you do really well when you were studying? What points did you not do well? So I can tell you, like, I can go all the way back into freaking elementary school and tell you what I did and did not do well, because I've thought about it so much. Cause I'm like, I try and figure out, like, why is it that I, like, you know, try out Khan Academy, try out Coursera. Like, I Google, well, how best to teach yourself data science? And you see all these Quora posts about people who, like, list 1,000 different links to 1,000 different courses. And you're like, okay, bye life. And no, I mean, it didn't work for me. I'm like, why doesn't this work? And why am I not that person who goes out and, like, dedicates their entire life to perusing these thousands of different links and to different courses? And for me, it was just because I need both practical application. I need to feel the pain, because it's like my work life depends on me getting this concept right. Like, I need to be able to like use a concept on my own data, that, and I actually do need feedback and consultation from somebody. I can't just submit my work to the cloud and then, like, just keep on trying until I get it right. At some point I get stuck. And, you know, you either Google the right answer and figure it out, or you can, like, if it's certain programs have resources that you can reach out to or forums that you can, you know, talk to different people and learn from them. And that's something I've learned back. I used to like freaking like almost flunk out of math and I'm a math major, but I struggled because I needed help and yeah. I'm not too proud to admit it. And I'm not too stubborn. And, you know, I don't have that much of an ego to be like, oh, I can figure this out on my own. I'm just going to go and ask the experts and learn from them. And I apply that everywhere.
I was going to highlight what you said because I think it's actually important for people to hear, which is your learning style really factors into this a lot. And so if you have kind of like an experiential style or a kinesthetic style, like getting your hands on it and doing it is like the only way. And other people can like read a book about it and it suddenly sort of pieces of it make sense to them because they have a visual or auditory style, depending on, you know. So obviously the people who listen to our podcast are auditory learners, maybe, I don't know, or just big fans of the show, whatever, not learning a darn thing.
They keep seeing it on Reddit and they just, you know.
Yeah, they keep seeing it.
Yeah.
Our huge new social strategy is all Reddit based. No, but I think that's a really good point that you made about identifying your style and, you know, as an analyst, right, you dug deep into your own experiences and you looked at, well, where did I excel educationally? Where did I struggle? What were the commonalities? And you kind of picked it apart. So I think that's really good tips.
So how did you go about, I mean, I'm sure in some cases it's obvious there's this one thing and there's this one course, but I mean, take Python for data science. Shit, there are probably 15 online courses between self-paced tutorial on Code Academy all the way through, you know, entire programs on edX. So how, when you've gone to take something, how have you researched or figured out this is kind of the right thing? Or do you just start with one and then bail if it's not doing, like, how did you go about filtering down to what's the one thing you're going to do now that's not all consuming?
So I learned SQL kind of on the job.
Yep.
But, and that job being a product manager at Netflix. because we were launching new metrics and I needed to QA them.
I learned Lotus Script on the job that way. And I think you got a much more sustainable, broadly applicable skill. But putting that aside, that was kind of the like, oh, inching along kind of with an immediate need, but
learning SQL was literally like just pissing off my DBAs at Netflix for a long time. They're like, put a limit clause. My God. so like, it wasn't until I basically, when was it? It was the break between Wiseline and joining Google on contract that I dedicated myself to fine tuning my skills and learning, like, not like I already knew SQL, but like pushing beyond that and learning R and Python and et cetera. And I knew I struggled. I wanted Code Academy to work. And I should say, as a blanket statement, my criticisms of any online program isn't that it's a bad program. It just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
And Code Academy seems like, oh, you're using what seems like theoretical but practical data, and you're like, you know, chugging through it, and you're just constantly like submitting assignments and getting graded on it. You pass fail essentially, but pass fail doesn't work for me. I need feedback, and I need to understand how to do something better. And I'm also very goal oriented, so I need to be working towards something
other than this question, fill out this, click the right thing when you're
like I need to know where I'm going and why. Mm-hmm. And so basically, in that tiny little break between my jobs, I decided I was going to start Udacity. And I did trial. Almost all of these do, like, if they're a paid program, they do trials. So I take advantage of the trials to see if it sticks for me. And for me, Udacity really did stick for me. There's definitely some downsides to it. But what I liked is that I felt like I knew what program I was working on. I felt like I knew what I was going to achieve when I was, you know, done with each module. And I felt like my homework is getting graded, not just pass fail, but actually I was getting feedback. The first time I got feedback, I like submitted something and I knew it worked technically, but they came back and they were like, there's a way more efficient way to do this. And I was like, yes, that's what I need to know.
Yeah, nice.
And because I can find like 50 different ways to solve a problem and like 49 of them will be massively inefficient. Mm. And I'll be proud of the fact that I found massively inefficient ways to solve problems just because it's creative, right? But I also need somebody to tell me, hey, there's a way, there's a shorter path to success. And so I think that sort of feedback is really helpful and not the sort of thing that you can get just Googling, you know, the answers to problems. It's trying to figure out what's the logic behind it, I guess.
Well, I definitely have seen people who have like taken courses in R and their code is abysmal and they clearly have not gotten feedback from somebody who knows how to write code. Oh, that
you. I'm sure that it was funny because I didn't know tidyverse. I was like, oh, what's this tidyverse thing about? I remember looking into it and being like, oh, I actually learned that as part of Udacity. So for me, that was it's a learning, it's particular learning style that I prefer. And that's what worked for me. Now, I should say that in parallel, I was also starting a new job at Google. And I had the freedom to actually try and apply some of these concepts to what I was working on. I was managing experimentation for Google Cloud Platform's website. And it was all manual pulls out of GA, input into a spreadsheet, and, you know, use particular calculations for your statistical tests. And I just was like, nah. And so I basically decided to start trying to pull the data through SQL and figuring out how to actually analyze the results of experiments using R that I was learning in parallel through Udacity. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is what actually made it stick for me, because it, in my mind, I was helping myself do better in my job. And I realized that is not necessarily a luxury that everybody has. But if you are in a position, I mean, the Klein in my last name is working mostly out of Excel as a business analyst for EA. And I tell him all the time, like, if you see a window where you could find the space to try and do things more efficiently and in parallel work on learning SQL, Python, R, do it.
But that's, I mean, there does have to be some intrinsic motivation for the analyst doing it. Cause I feel like I found that by saying I'm going to basically split my time with, you know, I know I could do this better. I would commit to it and say, I'm going to have to be dedicated. I get a little irritated with people are like, well, I don't know that, you know, how within my 8-hour workday are you going to let me, you know, do all this? And I'm like, well, this is not the job of the company. I mean, they should enable you to be successful, but if you literally have to fit it perfectly into your day-to-day task, I mean, I'm doing the repetitive thing with Excel and, oh my God, doing the statistical calculations is kind of jumping through a bunch of contortions. Yeah. And look, I found on Stack Overflow, that's literally one function in R. Oh crap. Now I have to pour in all the effort to figure out all the other stuff to get to use that one little function. But I think to like complimenting Michael, when you said different learning styles, I also feel like, you know, being honest with yourself, like, do you want to be uncomfortable? Are you ready to beat your head against the wall? Because SQL, Python, statistics, machine learning, like none of those at this point have you can go through Code Academy and feel really like, oh, I think I've learned Python because I went through that and that was pretty easy. And then you're like, an import what? Import pandas as PD, huh? So I think that, I mean, that's, I guess my experience has been that I've gotten way more comfortable with being pretty frustrated and beating my head against a wall. And it's more rewarding when you get through it and, you know, you beat your head against a wall, you know, 27 times and all of a sudden the wall starts to, you're doing it, you know, instead of 5 times a day, you're doing it twice a day.
I don't even think it's that you need to beat your head against the wall like to get progress. I think it's more that you need it to remember. So for me, I found when I started learning like R and SQL, at first I was pretty much on my own and I didn't really have anyone to help me. And I get really frustrated. And then more recently, I've had like a really good network of people that I can ask. And I got lazy and I would just kind of ask them. And one of them kind of gave me some shit over drinks and was like, hey, Mo, you know, you've asked me that 3 times now. And I was like, whoa, I'm doing too much asking. I need to do more beating my head against the wall. So now I have like a new thing where I don't ask anyone. I give it an hour. And if I'm still stuck after an hour, then I'll ask. But I try and self-solve because otherwise I don't remember. If someone just comes over and like changes a line of code, I don't remember how to solve that issue the next time versus if I spend the hour beating my head against a wall and reading like 5 blogs. And even if I still go ask someone, I remember how frustrated I was about the issue. And then I remember the solution to the issue.
See, I remember all the dead ends and I don't remember which one actually took me to the solution. So then I just repeat the same pointless exercise. I'm like, I'm back on this same fucking post again. And it did not help any of the last 3 times.
I think that's part of the, it's part of the journey. Like, I don't know. I just, for me, it's not all intuitive to me. And so I need to figure out how to make logical connections between these different minute problems that I'm solving. I need to figure out how to take this really abstract, complex problem and break it down into subparts and then translate those subparts into code. Mm. And if you can't do that, then it's only when you figured out that connection that you can repeat it. Mm. So like, it's a know thyself sort of thing. For me, I was one of those geeks that would take the homework and repeat it over and over and over again. Wow. Like a fucking crazy person. Wow. Because I figured out early in test taking in public education that literally most of the time teachers just take some subset of problems that they've offered in homework and swap in the numbers. But if you know the structure, like you can figure out, it's more about learning how to solve the problem than the actual numbers itself. And so for me, it just trained me to learn how to solve the problem. And I think when it comes to taking abstract like business problems that you need to solve in real life, breaking that down and figuring out how to solve it through code is just another word problem. Mm. Like literally most of today, I was just looking at a word problem and trying to figure out how to translate into SQL and driving myself crazy. And I still haven't figured it out. But this part is struggle. Like you have to beat yourself up for a little while and either you like have your epiphany or you ask for help. Mm. If you don't do one of those two things, like you got to time box yourself. You can't just let yourself spin out of control and burn out. Mm.
But what happened with the Udacity, or when it comes to back to the online learning, and Udacity is not one I've experimented or done any courses with. What's the mechanism if you're beating your head against a wall with a problem set or a assignment? What's the, like some platforms seem like they've got like, oh, there's forums if it's classes that are scheduled. Some really don't have a, like you're just stuck until I guess you Google for the answer. But what about that part of within a course getting help?
So with Udacity, they have forums, but I will be honest, like I actually did do the paid program because they have nano degree programs and I did a nano degree. I've done technically two. They it's a long story, but I definitely did intro. I did intro to programming. It was nice intro to like Python and yada, yada. I did the data analyst nano degree, but I didn't actually finish it. And I will explain why later. But they do have forums. I think with the paid service, you can also like reach out to like a teacher or whatever. Like, I don't know what you call them. Online teacher, person who knows more than you, whatever. Sensei, whatever. But I don't know if the forums are accessible, like regardless of whether you're in a paid program or not. But that being said, I am like one of those people like Googles everything. And I honestly think 80% of the battle with Googling is figuring out what to Google.
I agree. Yes. I agree.
Absolutely.
Like it's literally, if you could take one thing away from online courses, doesn't matter which one, it's knowing the terminology and then being able to apply that. Mm. you're Googling.
Yes. I feel like actually, it's one of my biggest qualifications, actually, is the it goes in two parts. First, Googling effectively and asking questions the right way. Those two things are superpowers. Exactly.
You can't ask your business question, right? You know, either it is, there's too many things in that question, terms in that question that nobody gives a shit about, and no one's going to, it's just not going to show up. The answers aren't going to show up. You have to know the technique terminology. That's what you need to know. And once I learned that, and I do think that online courses did help me at least learn that, it gave me a path to debug like 80% of my code.
See, my biggest issue though is whether or not a course has an offline capability. That, like, to me, so I've actually really been struggling with that because I love DataCamp. I think they structure things really well. But you have to, if you want to watch it offline, you have to go through and download every 2-minute video. And so for like a chapter, there's 12 videos you have to do. And I'm like, this is a shit show. So I've actually swapped to Coursera because you can download a whole week's worth of work, do it offline on a plane, and then come back. And to me, that's
really
like,
about a plane, Mo, because I feel like we need internet in order to record this podcast, and we've kind of experienced some of your challenges on the internet.
What's
internet
this offline front. You so, speak of?
I mean, you're partially offline.
Just by dint of being in Australia, is that what you're saying, Tim?
I think it's her house, but
okay.
I don't.
It's fine. My house is fine.
I don't live in the offline.
But I guess we didn't get, like, with the Udacity, like an intro to programming. So is it multiple courses? Is that like all of the MOOCs tend to have here's a program. You take these series of courses. Was Udacity like that? How much of a plunge, I guess, were you taking with the nano degree? Was it, I'm going to take this and I can, you know, I'll most likely quit tomorrow.
At the time they had an incentive where you get half of your money back if you finish within 12 months. And so for me, I was like, I don't know if they still have that, actually. I don't think they do. But at the time, that's what they had. And so that was, for me, I was like, game on, let's do this. And so, spoiler alert, I did.
Well, and then how long did it take? I mean, what kind of a commitment?
It would have taken me under 12 months, but I stopped and I didn't get that money back because I actually, in my job, I actually, like, things just kind of took off. And I hit that moment where these concepts stuck and I realized I was applying them in my day to day. And not only that, but I was helping others. And I think I felt like I could now, I kind of stopped right at the ML part. And I was like, I don't need to go there right now. I need to go there eventually, but I don't need to go there right now. Right now, I need to focus on my work. And now I'm applying a lot of these concepts in my day-to-day work. And I just felt like I could learn more on the job than I could off, in an online course at that point. Okay. That was just like a personal decision for me. That being said, you know, a year passed and I came to the one of many crisis points where I was like, okay, I don't know ML. I don't. So do I need to actually, and at the time I wasn't like, I don't want to sign up for another online course and pay a bunch of money to an online course where I just learn packages and I don't understand when I should apply them, I guess. I had learned enough at that point that I realized that just learning packages and being like, you can, you know, learn ML in X weeks, like I just felt like that was snake oil a little bit for me personally. I felt like you can, but there's all this other stuff that you'd have to learn as well on top of it. And for me, I wasn't convinced that signing up for another paid online course was the right course for me. I decided I actually needed to challenge myself professionally because, again, for myself, I knew that the best way for me to advance my techniques is to put myself in extremely uncomfortable situations in work and turn the heat up and rise to the challenge or fail and learn.
Yeah. So I want to kind of turn the conversation a little bit to a couple of other ways of looking at this. So we've talked a lot about kind of our sort of personal approach to learning. To what extent do the companies you're part of, and this is for any of us, play a role? You know, because we kind of, you know, I think we sort of implicitly said, hey, you're going to have to spend a lot of your own time doing this if you want to get better. But where does the company come from and what is their role in this in enabling people? You know, because I think obviously everybody who listens to this show is an awesome self-starter who's on their way to great things. But
or at least they're on their way to work.
Yeah, but, they need, yeah, which hopefully will be cool. Great things. But where does the who you work for, what can they be doing? Or what have you seen be like, wow, you know what? That was key, you know, in that role. Or, man, I got to get out of this job because it's holding me back from, you know, doing the things I know I need to do to it to learn and advance my career.
So I think if I could go back in time, you know, to my younger years in my career, I think I would have kicked myself in the ass to not be so insecure about asking other people to help me learn new skills. I don't think I've ever been able to take time out of my day, my actual work hours, to like, you know, look at an online course. I don't think I've ever had a company to actually like explicitly say you get X hours per week to just study. I think I would go back in time and have made connections with people to work with them, perhaps outside of work, to help learn new techniques. I think it's somewhat unrealistic, even at the best companies, to expect that you're going to be able to take time out of your 8-hour day, if that's your situation, to study up on new techniques. That being said, some companies allow that and encourage that. And you can bake that into, you can kind of reason it out if you're trying to solve a problem that the business will benefit from.
I've never worked at a company or seen a company that tries to push their people to learn where it is not a colossal waste of money on the company's part, because I think I strongly believe that like it's great for companies to not get in the way, like, and support, hey, if you want, you know, we'll meet you halfway with tuition reimbursement if you want to go back to school, or we'll support that. But I mean, I've got some infuriating examples of like basically a design of experiments class from Ohio State. And I was working at a company in Columbus and they said, we're going to have the professor come. You'll get time at work. You just go down to the basement. You're taking a college level class in statistics. And it was almost like people were like, oh, great. Like I get to do everything in my 8 hours. And they weren't remotely engaged in the content. Like, because they kind of had no skin in the game. They were trying to look at it as, you know, oh, the organization is doing this. And even companies that have multifaceted ways of learning, like trying to push employees to learn if they're not intrinsically motivated to learn and challenge themselves. And I think at most companies, you're going to wind up with spending a lot of money pushing people that's not really going to get you or them anywhere.
Yeah.
But I don't have strong opinions about it or anything.
I have a different experience in that my company, we have learning day once a month. We have pet project day once a month. And I think it's actually one of the benefits of our data and analytics team sitting in the technology department is that we sit alongside engineers, and our engineers sure as shit need to keep learning and keep their skills up. And it's expected that our analysts and data scientists do the same. I 100% would not have an issue if I was sitting at my desk one day for 3 hours on Coursera or DataCamp or whatever education provider, no one would have a problem with that, like at all.
That's literally not at all what I was saying. Like you,
haven't finished. So what I'm saying is I feel that in my like 8-hour day or whatever, it does sometimes become a 9-hour day because I'm choosing to do that learning, or a 10-hour day. So it's not like it's all in work time. But the one thing that I do struggle with is then there is an expectation that everyone can learn anything. Like, oh, there's all these online courses. If you don't have a particular skill, it's kind of expected everyone can just pick it up. And like some people just don't have the interest. And some people like they don't want to learn that stuff, but there's an expectation that if there's any skill you need, there's just this abundance of online courses and you can teach yourself. And I'm not good at teaching myself. I'm like, I feel like Lizzie and I learn very similarly. I need feedback. I need people to ask for help. I need to have practical examples. And so, I mean, we do have some like lunch and learn sessions, but I still feel like I can't sit on my own for 4 hours and have everything sink in. Like it just,
no, I think that's interesting, Mo, the concept of sort of like there being an expectation that because it's available and everybody knows it. I know a few years back, I rolled out the Coursera data science certificate at our company and offered to reimburse anybody who wanted to do it. Not a single person did it. And I was like, well, I guess people didn't want to learn about data science. And then later, after it was like, then people will be like, hey, I want to take this data science course. And I was like, you didn't even do the one that we offered to pay for. Like, what's... So I do think there has to be both sides of the equation, right? There's got to be opportunity. I think it has to happen volitionally. It'll only happen if the individual makes it happen. Because to your point, Tim, you know, you can sit in a class and just snooze. But I think if you're going to learn new stuff, it's going to be because you sat down and did it, which I think is interesting. Okay. So switching gears again, there is also a perspective that I think we could lightly tackle because we're actually getting pretty close on time. So let me just open up a real big can of worms, which is what about how this applies across genders? So, you know, like as men and women, I think there may be different expectations, certainly different experiences. And so I'd love for us to maybe chat a little bit about that if you've noticed or seen any of those as it pertains to kind of like your training, knowledge, growth, experience, all those kinds of things.
So Lizzie, I actually think we might have talked about this, but I have quite a few friends that are engaged in, like, say they're doing the Coursera Masters of or Data Science specialty, or I have another girlfriend who's doing a Masters of Data Science. And a lot of them have expressed to me that they really feel that they need that degree and that piece of paper, something that they can put on LinkedIn or on their resume that says, I'm qualified in this, because otherwise they're afraid they won't be taken seriously or that their skills won't be recognized. And I can understand their perspective and I really sympathize with it, but it's really interesting to me because you are such a confident person and you're so focused on your learning that the point of it is to learn. It's not about the bit of paper. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I've struggled with the desire to want the degree for similar reasons where it's like, I just want to be that much more competitive and show to a very male dominated industry that I am that much more qualified. So, I mean, like I can absolutely relate to that. And that's something that I've felt over and over again, where I've had these moments where I'm like, should I just put the rest of my life on hold and go back to school and get a master's and, or go back and get a PhD?
It seems like that putting your life on, going back into that degree for you would be kind of inefficient from a learning perspective. There'd be a lot of peripheral stuff that just from a raw knowledge would be challenging. So that's like the opportunity cost of, I would then have this, like, I would hope that the industry is starting to evolve and get enough of a clue that it starts to become, yeah, at that company with that group or that particular asshole, you know, that insecure dude. And, you know, it's just kind of like, well, that I would hope there would be more organizations. And even as education is evolving and people are realizing that the online learning comes up, that may be a barrier if someone is saying, where I am right now, wow, if I don't have a degree, then I don't know that culturally it's going to be acknowledged that, you know, an alternative might be, well, maybe I shouldn't be here. I can spend a year kicking ass with online tailoring to what makes me effective and be able to show and demonstrate my skills. And I'm completely cognizant that this is now the dude like chiming in on on this particular topic. I mean, it makes me cringe.
Tell us more.
It makes me cringe. Good Lord. Nicely done.
I think what you meant to say, Tim, was...
You know what? Yeah. If you could explain... Yeah.
Let's put another man in here to explain. Double mansplain this.
Right. But I mean, it is so depressing that if we're not feeling like, not that the end is in sight, but there's at least progress, that we're not having to do, like, literally in absolute terms, not what makes the most sense in order to, you know, advance in the way that reasonably someone should be able to advance. I'll stop now.
Yeah.
No, all I was going to comment was I think I've felt that need for validation or sense of, do I need this to be competitive? And so in some small way, I think I kind of understand, but certainly I don't think I can see it from the perspective of there being this real layer of sort of expectation of like, oh, this guy's got these things, so I'd absolutely hire him over, you know, her, who doesn't seem to have those things when all other things may be equal or even advantageous for the woman. So I think that's certainly something to think about. Okay. One of the things we do on the show. No, Mo, what?
You need to let Lizzie finish her comment before we roll to the next.
Literally two men just took over a conversation about gender and how that factors into decisions about progressive education. And
all right, we're backing up. I'm sorry. I missed the signal very badly. So
okay. I was comically letting you guys do this until I could make a crack at you guys.
No. Bring it back.
Let's bring it back. As I was saying, I have felt, you made a comment about my confidence. We all have our moments, and I have definitely felt that I need a PhD in order to compete with the men. I've always felt that way. And I guess I'm just stubborn. Like, I don't want to just give in to that expectation. And I think the best advice that I've gotten is your portfolio speaks for itself. And so if anything, work on your portfolio. It's very, very difficult to compete with a PhD, but if you have practical experience solving business problems, that speaks volumes more than building something for theoretical purposes. So I know that seems like easier said than done, but for me, even though I may not be able to compete with people in certain ways who have a computer science degree, I know that I bring a value to the table, which is that I can solve problems and I can make those connections very fast in terms of how to find a problem. And I know code. So basically, leverage the strengths you already have, learn how to round out the skill set, and you're probably already working with a lot more than someone who spent most of their life in academia.
I just had an epiphany, an actual epiphany.
Not that spending your life in academia is bad, by the way.
No, my epiphany is...
Sometimes I fantasize about it, but...
You're totally right, though, on the, why don't we do this more, of having the portfolio of, like, here is an example of some of my SQL code, and, you know, here are the comments on the insights that I found and shared with the business. I was answering this business question. Here's some of my R code. Like, lots of companies do tests, but why don't we do, this is genius, genius.
You just build out your GitHub, man.
All right. On that note, now we do have to start to wrap up. So this is really great. Tim will edit out all of the parts where we look like jerks.
I know. I'll just stay in looking like a jerk.
Okay. And then... Let's jump to last call. So one of the things we like to do on the show is just go around the horn and share anything we found recently that is of interest or we think might be interesting to our audience. Lizzie, you're our guest. Would you like to go first?
Sure. My last call is basically a plug for the blog/writings of Cassie Kozarkoff, which, disclaimer, works at Google. I do not know her personally at all, but she is the chief decision scientist at Google. That's her title, which is a kick-ass title. She has a way of writing about very technical concepts in very relatable ways. And I kind of you know, started following her on Twitter, have been following her writings for a little bit recently, and just am kind of enamored with the way that she communicates technical concepts. Like, it's very tempting for people to write about technical concepts and go straight into the weeds, but she keeps it higher level, but still something that can stick with you by using analogies and just actually using humor baked into all of this, like comparing ML and AI to an island of drunk coworkers. It makes sense when you think about it, not like a magic box and instead like an island of drunk coworkers that you're trying to train to identify things. It's actually like, oh yeah, there are limitations to this and there's an actual application to it. Anyway, so I just think the way she communicates very technical data science concepts is for me, extremely accessible, which I enjoy.
You're going to make my last call look really shit now. Thanks.
Hey, Mo, would you like to go next?
Oh, I don't want to go next. I actually got pointed to, I didn't know Berkeley had an official blog of machine learning, but they do. And one of my colleagues, Sahil, pointed me to it. And I actually started trawling through. And I found it really good because it was really easy to, like, they explain concepts really easily and they're really easy to follow. But I feel like now I've got some other reading to do. So, you know, maybe read Lizzie's first.
No. Read them all.
I found a Quora. My last call is going to be I'm going to start a Quora question and answer it myself, or I'm just going to list the stuff you guys are recommending to read that will take so many hours. Yeah. Michael, you want to do your last call?
Yeah, actually, my last call is a little bit weird, but it's the only thing in the last week that I was just really fascinated by. So there's a company named Fairy God Boss, and they are a startup that works with corporations to help promote a gender equal workplace and then creates job listings for women. And so they've done a ton of research into how women evaluate roles at companies, and especially in tech. And they're doing a lot of work to help companies realize what they can do to make the workplace more accessible and equal. And then helping those companies it generates a lot of positive things for those companies, including being able to recruit highly qualified women to their company. So the company's name is Fairy God Boss. It looks really cool. I met somebody from the company last week, and then I got a chance to talk to them for a while and then check out their website. So nothing to do with analytics, but if you're a woman in technology, you should definitely check out their website. And if you're a guy, you should also check out their website because you'll learn something. Hey, Tim, what's your last call?
So mine is going to be much off the – I'm going to try to tie it into analytics, and it's going to be a little bit of a winding road, but – I was actually got to meet Donal Phipps a few weeks ago, and I never met him in person, but we've collaborated quite a bit through the Measure Slack and GitHub and Twitter and elsewhere. And so one, it was just kind of fun that because it happened to be where we were meeting in London, he was like, hey, you know, Thomas Bayes is buried near there. So we actually met up at Thomas Bayes's grave, which was just kind of cool and fun. But as we moved from there to several pubs, we were talking about magic and how learning magic and the craft of magic, that you can sort of learn some things about storytelling and suspense, and that he's very interested in the technique of magic and doing magic tricks effectively. Not that he does a lot of them, that he thought that was actually a good skill for an analyst, which ties into my first of two little last calls, which recently, it was a replay, but it's a good one, of This American Life called The Magic Show. And just the first segment, which is Teller from Penn and Teller walking through the years that he worked on crafting this one trick and sort of the care and the craft. Like, to me, it was kind of illustrating the love and passion for a craft, as well as sort of thinking through it from many different facets. And since I literally, that was coming out very shortly after I had talked to Dunnell, I was kind of intrigued by that. But then separately, because I just can't not recommend this podcast, and my analytics tie-in is that John Lovett turned me on to it. Has nothing to do with analytics, but it's called Cocaine and Rhinestones, and it is awesome. It is about deep stories of country music from the 20th century told by the son of David Allan Coe. And Mo, from your body language, you think it's terrible. It winds up hitting all sorts of weird cultural things. I thought it was going to be like whatever, and I'm totally hooked on it. And I highly recommend it. And I'll stop there. But wow, Mo, you just have no faith. You've got so many machine learning things you'd rather be reading.
Well, sometimes. Sometimes I just go straight over.
I wrote it down. I'm going to look it up.
There are a plethora of wonderful podcasts out there. Sometimes we're one of them. But this time, I think everyone will agree it was a great conversation. Lizzie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
No problem.
If you've been listening and you are thinking, hey, this really represents my journey, or this does not sound like anything I've tried before, we'd love to hear from you. And you can reach us on our Facebook page or on Twitter or on the Measure Slack. And we'd love to hear from you if you've got questions or comments about the show. I think that's going to wrap us up for this episode. I know I speak for my two co-hosts, Mo and Tim, when I say to everybody out there, keep learning and analyzing.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Measure Slack group. We welcome your comments and questions. Visit us on the web at analyticshour.io, facebook.com/analyticshour, or at Analytics Hour on Twitter.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
I've spent all day eyeballs deep in SQL code, so apologies.
Oh, this is the perfect outlet.
Human interaction. it's going to be awkward. I'm sorry. I may or may not be drinking an old fashioned right now. That's... See you all over Reddit /
Really? We're on Reddit?
I'm kidding.
All part of our strategy, let me assure you.
I was trying to think of a really good obscure Reddit, and I just couldn't think of it.
Hey, Tim, look at my gain levels. They're through the roof.
Oh, guys, there's so many words in this.
I forced Tim to go with me to one in Las Vegas. We were very not comfortable. Yeah, he's trying to talk less, Mo.
Yeah, don't.
And you're calling him out on it.
Don't call him out. Yeah.
Why are you trying to talk less?
He's not. It's just late at night. It's super late where he is.
So if you see a bearded man walk in and hand me a drink, that's the client.
That's perfectly okay. We all wish a bearded man might come in and hand us a drink.
I'm supposed to fill awkward silences, right? Do I keep talking? Here I go.
Is that you?
Thunder.
What was that?
It's a sign from God. He's like, wrap up the show. All right. Listen, this has been a really good...
Tim hasn't done
Tim
last call.
No, Tim lost his last call privileges when he was rude to our guest. I'm sorry.
Went all mansplaining.
Yeah, that's right. No. Okay, hold on. Give me a break, and then let me ask Tim.
Rock flag and online learning.